Welcome back to Kicking It Local, the podcast all about the football community in South Australia. I'm your host, Johnny Kecko. Macron Sports Hub Adelaide are ready to provide your club, academy or organisation with all its teamwear needs. For inquiries or online shopping, head to macronstoreadelaide.com.au. Now let's get back into my chat with part two of Nat Harrison. If you don't remember part one, here is a quick refresher.
I saw in the paper that he was coming over to Adelaide to speak to a home building company, that he had a friend that was the owner of a home building company. So I'm there, oh, look at the time he's going to be here. It's going to coincide with the 100th show for Full On Football. Oh. So I'm there, how am I going to get to ask him? And so in the end, I contacted a president from Adelaide City, and he, because obviously he was a coach there at some stage.
And that ended up being the final episode ever of Full On Football.
It was.
How sad was that for you to end it?
Look, it was very, very sad. It was due to sponsorship, because Bianco had pulled out of all soccer or football sponsorship. So we got a lot of sponsorship from them. Clubs were saying, I will give you, X amount, this, that and the other. But it really wasn't enough to continue for the full season. So I did ask the TV station if I could get to 100 shows. And they helped me to do that. And then it was like, that's it. We finished, I think, end of June or July. In 2009, and that was it. That was the last. It was really, really sad, because it was a passion. It was just starting to gather momentum.
Yeah.
Because people were knowing about it and they were following it and watching it and knew what you were doing. But then I have to say, the next year, when I really wasn't involved in anything anymore, because I did pull right away, it was like, I can go and do whatever I want now. Yeah. I can go four-wheel driving, I can do something else, because we filmed that as well. So, yeah, it was all different things that I ended up getting myself interested in.
Did you manage to maintain friendships with some of these people, like Raleigh and the likes?
Oh, yes. Raleigh would ring quite often. And as I said, when he rang, when you saw his name come up, it was like, here we go, it's going to be an hour and a half on the phone. Because he couldn't talk for a little amount of time. Because his stories would go from here, this, and you would hear everything. And you're not going to go, oh, I'm going to finish this, because you're listening to history, and things that happened and what they did and when they went over for the 74 World Cup and what they did and how they trained and where they stayed and, everything was all innocent backyard stuff. There was nothing professional, and they did it the hard way. So it was fantastic to hear these stories, and from a brain like that, and you go, wow, this is amazing. This is amazing.
Incredible. He's the stories I've heard of him as well have all been exactly the same. Just a lovely man. And it's sad that we've lost him now, but we still got these stories to share, which is awesome to hear your story as well.
Yeah, it's good. He's got a lot of good friends around in Australia. A lot of journalists too, that have got a lot of stories about him and have written things about him as well, which is fantastic. So, yeah, it's embedded in your heart, in the piece in your heart. There is a little piece in there that's for Raleigh, and very, very sad. But we don't live forever. That's the thing.
You got to cherish all those moments.
Absolutely.
And a good thing about the show that you had as well, that those moments there that the family can look back on, and everyone that was friends with him can look back on those stories as well that you managed to share in that moment, and not just for Raleigh but all the other people you had as well.
Oh, look, whether they did or not, they might have. But I know even sometimes the smallest person that's not famous gives you one of the best experiences. We had this young girl that was chosen. So there was a competition in Australia for the best male and best female junior playing football. And so it was kind of like a bit like a Survivor. You had to go through all these different things, and then, people would drop off, and so you'd do keepy up and you'd be scoring goals and doing this and that. And then it got to a point where there'd be like, two girls and two boys left. So it was a boy and a girl that won the competition.
Yeah.
And it was a girl from South Australia. And do you know what they won? they won 2 weeks in David Beckham Football Academy.
Wow.
Over in England.
Yeah.
And so they spent 2 weeks. David Beckham was with them for 2 weeks and they learnt all the things that he was teaching them and coaching them. Amazing. So obviously when she came back, Angela Fermano, I think was the girl's name, and we came back and we had her back on the show and she told us how it was and her parents said it was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. And she learnt so much and she was a very talented footballer as well.
I can only imagine what it'll be like to be in that academy. Oh.
And it was two kids from every country
were
there.
Wow.
That's what he gave. And so he gave two weeks for each of those children. So there was – it wasn't every single country, sorry, but there was, you know, a lot of kids that were there. So, yeah.
That's unreal. And it's good that you got to share those stories. Well, since that – you finished in 2009, that's 14 years ago now. what's happened since then for you? Like, what's life been like? Obviously your kids grown up now, so – more time to spend with them. What was it like? And especially that first year of not having it.
Well, the first year was like, oh, a bit like you. The season's coming up and we do previews and it's like, oh, I'm not previewing round one anymore, right? I'm not going there. I'm not doing this. I sort of went to a few matches here and there, but then it was sort of like, well, why? I couldn't handle it. So when I went to a match, it was like, I need my camera and I need to film this.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was doing. I couldn't just sit there and watch the game.
Yeah.
It was impossible. So then I stopped going. But then I became more interested in other things. So as I said, we started on full-on four-wheel drive where we did – my husband and I, we would do four-wheel driving trips and record them and record, you know, we would do treacherous trails and rocky trails and things like that.
Yeah.
And we would record them and put them up on full-on four-wheel drive YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So I also started full-on filming, so helping people – to know how to film games. I have to tell a story that one night, it was a Saturday night, and Sassy team that Martin Crook was the coach of was playing Salisbury down at Salisbury. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go to this game and I'm going to film it because I don't do many of the State League games. So I went there and I just got there and I get a phone call from Martin Cook and he goes, are you at the game? And I said, yeah, I've just got here. I'm going to film the game. And he goes, oh, guess what? Our cameraman has just brought all his equipment and he's opened his bag and his camera's not in there.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, you're joking. And he goes, would you be willing to film the game for us? And I'm there, well, I don't film like your cameraman does because what Martin liked is he liked to film it out wide so you saw everything, you saw the whole pitch. And I did not film like that. I filmed more like AFL games. So when the guy's got the ball, you zone in on him.
Yep.
You know, if he scores a goal, you zone in on his
reaction,
emotion.
Yeah.
You zone in on the keeper's reaction. So I was zooming in and out all the time. And I said, well, I'm going to film it because I'm filming it for the game, for the show. If you don't mind that, I'll try and pull out a bit more for you. And he goes, okay. So then the game finished and I had these cameras that had hard drives on them. So there was no SIM cards, there were no tapes or anything. They were a hard drive. And he said, how am I going to get the footage because I need to show it to the guys on Monday? And I'm there, oh, well, the only way is for you to take my camera. And I was really hesitant to do that because I also needed that for the show.
Yeah.
So he said, look, I'll take it and I'll do it tonight and I'll ring you up and you can come and collect it tomorrow. How's that? And I said, all right. I was, you know, okay, I trusted him. And then it was about midnight and I get a text message for him and he said, I'm watching your footage and I've never seen anyone film like this ever. He said, it's amazing. You're really capturing the moment of the game. And I said, well, I taught that myself because I watched how AFL was filmed. Of course, they got 5-6 cameras.
Yeah.
But you're still watching. What are they doing? They're pulling you into the game. You're not just sitting watching this box going, oh, yeah, but you're not really seeing anything happen.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was a big compliment that he said that.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then the next day, true to word, he went. There was a game at Beograd, White City they were called back then, and he brought my camera and he gave it back to me and then I was able to download it for the match, for the game. Wow. Sorry for the show. So, yeah, that was another moment that was like pinch your moment.
Yeah. Well, filming isn't easy. I've done it for the NPL. Like, I've had to fill in because the camera operators had pulled out and I would help them out because I've done that stuff with basketball as well, local basketball.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not easy. It's especially if you don't set it up properly or you move slightly and you're trying to fix something or something's gone wrong. And you miss a moment. It just takes 2 seconds to miss a key moment, and it's not easy to do. So for you to do that every week and get a compliment the way you did as well from Martin Crook is incredible.
It was. Yeah. It is. It's not easy. And then sometimes when you zoom in and then the action's happening over here and you go, oh, damn it, I've got to pull out again to make sure I capture this, you know. But one thing that was funny, a lot of the times obviously when you're filming all this, all you're capturing is the crowd around you and what they're saying. And if, you know, sometimes they can be swearing, sometimes they can be shouting. But then what I started to do was I started to follow the radio guys. So the guys that were broadcasting on radio, I would start going to the games that they were commentating at. And so really old school, I would get some headphones or the earbuds, and I would tape them to my camera where the microphone was. And so they would be talking and I would be filming, so you'd get a commentated game.
That's awesome.
Because we didn't have commentated games back then.
Yeah.
And that was funny in itself because they'd be commentating, they'd say, oh, Nat's here. Nat, did you see who scored that goal? Because we missed it. And then I'd text to them, yeah, it was so-and-so, Chad Bajaya or whatever. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, Chad Bajaya. So we had a lot of banter as well between that. Mm. So that was quite funny as well.
That's awesome.
But that was just using the resources that you got to make it more of a professional product.
You have to. It's not well, back then things weren't as accessible as they are these days.
No.
Like I was able to set up a studio here, but when I was starting, podcast equipment wasn't as popular. It wasn't as versatile. There wasn't as much stuff out there. But I can just imagine what it was like. That was only 3-4 years ago, and it's come a long way in just a short time. But I can only imagine what it was like 15 years ago when you were starting out and doing it back then. So to do what you did is would have been a lot of hard work and effort, but it's the passion that obviously got you there.
Yeah, it was a lot of hard work. My husband that I'm married to now, he was in Victoria. And so he was a baker. So he used to go to bed like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and then get up at, you know, like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. And he'd send me a message online, and I'd still be online because I'd be working on the show, because I would also do the results, fixtures, and the ladders graphics as well. So I used to do all that. So you've got to have all of that right. An introduction to each section had different colour schemes and different patterns and things like that. So I studied what the AFL did, and I thought, okay, that's their product. They've got a whole lot more money and resources, but I can do something similar to that with what I've got.
Yeah.
And so it did make it look more professional than just, you know, having a piece of paper in front of you and you're reading it or something like that. So I did a lot of those graphics and obviously all the logos of all the club, made sure that when we had those graphics, you could see the graphics of the logos of each of the clubs, so people became familiar with it as well. Yeah. So, a lot. I do not know how I did it. Our catchphrase was don't run on empty, get full on football. But I tell you, I was running on empty a lot of times because I was getting full on football.
If you don't mind me asking, how old were you at that time when you were doing it?
I would have been 46.
Yeah.
46. Okay. And my kids would have been, well, the oldest would have been 16.
Yeah.
And then 15 and 14.
Yeah.
And they were all like the 14 and 15-year-old, my youngest daughter and my son were all playing for Adelaide Olympic, which was Adelaide Olympic / West Adelaide.
Yep.
Down at the reserve B52 there on near the where used to be Cooper's Brewery.
Mm.
So they played there. And so I was there because they played different – because my daughter played in the boys' league. She didn't play in the girls' league. And so they played trained different nights than my son. So I was there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday.
Yep.
So it was like, oh, my goodness, like you're here all the time. And that was why people said – because at that moment, that was when I started conceptualizing the show.
Yep.
And I would run it past people and they'd go, oh, that sounds amazing, that sounds amazing, you know. So we also had – Ian Rush had clinic here over I think it was maybe 2008 – and so we were able to interview him as well.
Wow.
Which was good. Had a bit of a chat with him as well, and his passion to spread football through young children.
Yep.
Because it was all under 18, like all under 18, starting at littlies, you know, 5, 6 years old, right through to the 18,
yeah.
under 18 year olds or under 17s.
Wow.
And we had people like Costa Mantis was in there. So if you know Costa,
yeah, absolutely.
He was one of the players that was there. My daughter was there. She won the Ian Rush most improved because they had 3 days, I think, of coaching.
Yep.
And so she had the most improved player. So that was she was the under 13s, I think. So.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, so it's little moments like that you've got to. Like you say, you see someone, then you go, oh, I'm going to go there. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to ask a question because that moment will disappear. And then you're going to be always saying to yourself, I should have, you know.
Yep.
And just do it.
Yeah.
Because if you get embarrassed, oh, well, so big deal. You got embarrassed, you were a bit shy, you were a bit nervous. But then the next time you do it, you're not going to be like that again because you've already done it. You've kicked that ball down the road. Now comes the next ball, you know.
Exactly. It's and just thinking about the moment, like, oh, with what I'm doing, comparing it to what you had to do back then, I'm doing it now, but I'm obviously single, I'm younger, but to be able to do it, I couldn't imagine having 3 kids as well, and taking them to training, going to film the games and all that. So that's a lot of work. I know with me, sometimes there's been times where I've like sit there and go, should I stop doing this? It's a lot of work, not just this podcast, but all the other things I'm doing on the outside as well.
Yeah.
Trying to get into the media, doing the media industry and all that stuff. But did you ever have moments like that where you were like, this is becoming too much for me, or did you just always enjoy it?
Look, overall, things were pretty positive.
Mm.
But when there were moments that were negative, either through the governing body or something happened, it's like, what am I doing this for?
Yep.
I'm not getting paid. It's all for free. In actual fact, to put the show on the TV cost $1,000 a week.
Wow.
Sometimes when I didn't have all the sponsorship, I would be contributing to that myself.
Mm.
So you were scrimping and saving. Again, you know, you're using every second of your time that you've got and hardly sleeping at all, and plus continuing on working full-time and full-time as a family.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, I've got no idea how I did it.
Yeah.
It's the passion.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, the passion wins out over you going, I love, at the end of the day, you love doing what you do.
I do, yeah.
You get a kick out of it. Kicking it local, but you get a kick out of it.
Exactly.
So when you're telling me when we were talking off air as well, and you're sitting there and you're going, hey, look where we are. We're at the World Cup. Look who I'm talking to. You can never get rid of that. That's a memory you'll have for the rest of your life.
Mm.
And then you'll see something and all of a sudden that memory sparked and you go, oh, I remember when I did that.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, how did I do that?
Mm.
But you did it. And then seeing the enjoyment from other people. I have to tell you another story. There was a thing that used to be the sportsman's breakfast.
Yep.
And they used to have a breakfast that was once a year, the South Australian Sports Association, and they would have key guest speakers. It used to be like at Santos Stadium or something like that. And this one time, John Cosmina was going to be the keynote speaker, so the guest speaker.
Yeah.
And I thought, I want to hear what's he going to talk about? I want to hear him. So I went along to this breakfast and he was amazing because he talked about when he left Australia and he went over to try and crack it in the UK. And I think he went to Arsenal. Look, don't quote me on that. I might be wrong. But he went over to a club to try and break in to be a player in the UK league.
Mm.
And he said, when I got over there, I realised how shit I was. Sorry for swearing. But he said,
you can on this.
He said, I realised how shit I was because I thought I was Mr. King back there in Australia, but here I'm not as good as some of the other people. So he had to work really, really hard. And he said it was one of the hardest things he had to do.
Yep.
It was so interesting listening to him and then talking about how he was asked to be a coach for Adelaide United when they were coming up to be in the A-League. Well, they performed in the – they played in the NSL in the dying year, but then obviously went on to play the first round – or the first year of the A-League. And so he talked about all that, how quickly they put that together. Basically it was sort of something like 6 weeks – and they pulled all that together and pulled all these players. They had a lot of players from South Australia, local guys. So it really was the people's team. People knew the players. And then they had a few stars here and there, you know, that were fantastic too. But it was so interesting listening to what he had to say. And the table that I sat at, I knew no one. They were all random people. And this young guy and his mum, he must have been about 20 years old. And at the end of it, he came up and he said, "You're Nat from Full On Football, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I'm thinking, how does he know that? And he goes, "My mum and I, we don't follow soccer. We don't play soccer, but we watch your show."
Yeah.
And he said, "We feel like we know everything about this local league. And I'm going, wow, how good's that?
Yeah, that's good.
It was really lovely.
And that's one reason I know now it's different times now. YouTube is a lot more out there, more accessible than community TV is. Well, back then there were six TV stations. There was your ABC, SBS, your Channel 7, 9 and 10 and community station. Now you've got access to everything and there's so many free-to-air, but a lot of people don't even have that anymore.
Mm.
But the reason why I wanted to get back onto Channel 44 is just to reach those other different community, hopefully, that wouldn't be accessing the YouTube. But YouTube's there mainly primarily for the football fans that know of the game. But I would love to have those moments as well. And I've had a similar moment with this podcast that I was in a week where I was stuff had happened and I was thinking, should I maybe stop the podcast? I don't know if any reason for me to go on with it. But I had someone at a game and this guy came up to me and goes, "Are you John? You're Johnny?" He goes, "I listen to your podcast." And he goes, me and my daughter listen to it every Wednesday on our way to training. He goes, we listen to it and we love the stories. She's playing football and she'll love listening to Nicole Tilly and all the other female footballers and hearing those stories. I'm like, oh wow, it's a weekly thing, and it's touching and just hearing those moments. And I think that's what's great. That reminded me the community is what I'm doing it for. And I think the same was for you. And just those moments of hearing those stories and just make it all worth it.
Yeah.
The time, the money especially, and the effort.
Absolutely. Mm. You're not doing it for yourself to get a big name and be a big star. You're doing it to pass on all this information and hear from people. Because as I said at the start, when they cross that line and they go on the pitch and they play, they are a player.
Yeah.
But when they come off, they are different people.
Exactly.
They have lives. They've got families. And it's interesting to hear those stories. Like SBS used to say, 6 million people, 6 million stories. It's the same thing. Everyone's got a different story. And sometimes you might latch on to someone or you might start talking about something and you go, wow, this is amazing. I'll tell you one time, just another quick story.
I love it. That's what you're here for.
Went into a competition on radio to win the chance to train with Adelaide United.
Wow.
Right? On SAFM.
Yep.
I won. Right?
Oh, wow.
And so did Jules Schiller. So Jules Schiller is now on the radio.
Yep.
So he was there. So there was, I think there was something like 12 of us. Wow. Right? And because I got a photo, we wore the strips and everything and we went out and trained with John and the players and he really made us train hard. We were hopeless, but that was really good. And there was this one boy there, so he was like, I think 20 years old, and he started telling his story that he nearly died of a heart attack and he had to have a heart transplant and stuff like this. And we're going, oh. Like Jules and I are there, we're not worthy to be here because of this guy. This guy died, nearly died.
Yeah.
And now he's recovering. And he was doing this with us.
Yeah.
And it was all sorts of people that were in that group. But it was amazing. And we've got this photo, and Jules and I still keep sending it to him going, remember this time? Because John has been saying, oh, come on, that you can run a bit faster than that. And I'm there, no, I can't because I'm slack. I'm unfit, you know. But it was funny and it was great. And the players themselves were really good with all of us too. They helped us. So they knew we were all crap. But, you know, they made doubt that we were training like they were.
They made moments
for you. That's right.
Yeah.
And so you know, there's another little story that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't gone into the competition.
That's awesome. So, fortunately, I can't win competitions like that. Now working at the SAFM and Triple M.
Right.
So I miss out on things like that.
Right,
but
right.
But that's awesome that you got that opportunity. And And just hearing those stories from other people as well. That's one thing I love about going to the local game is when I'm not commentating, I'm at the games having a beer with someone. And then I'm at a point now where I don't ask anyone to come with me because I know I'm going to end up chatting to someone. I've got a lot of people that want to come occasionally, but I'm like, I know that I'm probably not going to end up talking to you because other people are going to come to me. I took my nephew to one game. And he was bored. He was like, I want to go home. I want to go home. And I'm like, all right, we'll go home now. And then next I'll start talking. Hey, how are you? I start talking. Can we go now? And then I'll go next one. And then after we get home, he's like, he kept on talking to everyone.
Yeah, but that's what happens.
We stayed for the whole game by the end of it.
There you go.
Because by the time I walked out, six, seven people I spoke to and he ended up kicking the ball by the end of it. Now he loves LA United, which is a great thing.
Mm-mm.
But it's just a great community to be a part of.
Well, look, there was another time that I was at Adelaide City game. It was a night game, a Monday night game, and it was just after SA and WA had played the because we kind of had like you know how they have the rugby Western Australia and Victoria, and Queensland. We sort of had that too where we had, you know, different states playing against each other, and SA and WA was always a really good competition. And so that was played on either a Saturday or a Sunday, and then on the Monday night was Adelaide City game. So I was at the game. I wasn't filming. I was just watching this at this particular time. Don't know how I got through it. but these two guys, I hadn't started the show yet. I was thinking of doing the show. Oh, no, I had started it. That's right. It was the first year. These two guys come up to me and they were photographers and videographers from Western Australia. And so we started chatting, da, 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 and I said I was doing this show. And that's amazing. So they were asking me all these questions about the show and they said, why don't you do a franchise and have full-on football WA, full-on football SA? And I said, that's a lot of work to do that, but – you know, I suppose you could be part of full-on football and do it in WA. You know, so we had a lot of conversation with them. But another thing that I hasten to tell you is that the footage that I took of SA games, I then sent to Victoria because there was a show on Aurora TV called the Australian Soccer Show or the Australian Football Show. I can't remember.
Mm.
And it was a Greek guy that in Victoria that was putting on the show, and we were sending highlights of South Australia and I'd do a little write-up so they would have that. So all the people that watched this show all over Australia were watching the SA highlights, but people here weren't seeing it. And they were going, how come these people here see it? And I said, well, you might want to ask the governing body about that.
Yep.
But about getting more help from them.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, that what the governing body gave to me were media passes to get into, so season passes for the games.
Yep.
And that was it. So no sponsorship, no monetary value.
Mm.
That was it.
Did that put you off a little bit or just?
I won't say what I want to say.
Yeah.
Because I was extremely angry because I said to them, this is not Nat's FFSA, because that's what it was called back then, FFSA. I said, this is your, I'm promoting your game. You're the governing body. And they played hardball, but it was a fight. Look, I tried fighting it, but in the end I just went, you know what, I'm going to go my way and do my thing.
Yep.
And then you do whatever you want. But the thing is they were benefiting from it, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, no one else was benefiting. They were.
But you reckon if it was different times, maybe a little bit different because of the – at that time, it wasn't a regular thing that local leagues were being filmed. But now live streaming's just taken the next level.
Yeah, it's definitely – I have a lot of people that are friends and parents, like, for instance, Tony Goodwin, Craig's dad. He said, you were way before your time.
Yeah.
He said, you did things that are coming into the fore now, right? Mm. He said, you should be proud of what you did. I am. I'm very proud. Yeah. I got to 100 shows and I did a lot of – things. I've filmed a lot of games, helped a lot of people to be able to get footage in a variety of reasons, and also promoted the local game and also promoted amateur league, women's league and junior league and collegiate league as well. And then the school leagues when they had the SAPSASA competitions.
Yeah, wow. And it's a lot of stuff you've covered. Mm. But even think about it, like even the A-League doesn't have a weekly show. Well, they've had some, but it hasn't lasted 100 shows.
No. Because we had A-League on as well, and we would only do Socceroos when they were involved in their stuff.
Yeah.
So as I said, I wasn't going to go down the track of doing EPL or Serie A or the Spanish League, La Liga, because there were, you know, SBS was doing that beautifully. Oh, also times where I met Les Murray as well, where he came down here and he did he was with Western Strikers and he helped commentate a game, and then they had a evening celebration at night, a big gala, a ball.
Wow.
And so, you know, I was able to sit and talk with him as well.
Mm.
In actual fact, went outside and he was having a cigarette and I'm there and it was only him and I, and we were sitting there and we were talking about all sorts of things like covering SBS, covering, and he was saying, oh, in the old days, nobody wanted to do it. They said, you know, stupid soccer. And he said, now look at us, we're doing everything. We're going doing World Cup and, you know, all sorts of things. And they were amazing. So
I loved watching Les Murray back in the day. That's almost one of my other inspirations to do what I'm doing as well, just watching that back in the day. Because I think we just got dial-up in our house back in 2005 when I was watching LA United.
Mm.
And the only ways I could get my football fix was teletext and the world game.
Yeah.
Well, the world game. Teletext back in the day as well?
Yeah. Well, the world game was really important because you were able to see all of those games and the footage. And also Channel 2 did the English Premier League every Monday night.
Yep.
My kids knew everything. They knew all the players and everything. That's part of how when I started full-on football, I used to think to myself, how do kids – when I asked my child, didn't matter if it was a boy or a girl, I've got two girls and a boy in the middle, and I'd say, who wears number 5 for Hawthorn? They could tell me straight away. Who plays for North Melbourne? They could tell me straight away. Who's Carlton's captain? They could tell me straight away because they saw it all the time on TV.
Yep.
And so the objective of full-on football was to try and familiarise kids especially with the players of today and who were playing in the leagues, so that when they progressed and they got better and better and they were accepted into the state team, because then we had state team games and then they got into Adelaide United, people already knew who they were. They already had a following. Mm. That was the whole objective of trying to do full-on football, as well as opening your eyes up to coaches and also referees, so the officials. Without officials, you can't have a game.
Mm.
So making sure that all those people were important. So full-on football had a voice for everyone and everyone had a voice.
Yeah, that's brilliant because, well, especially referees, we've seen it with the A-League and all that, they had to come out about the referees and the treatment, or Football Australia did, sorry. They're one part that I know a lot of people get angry at, but the one thing I've done, I've made an effort to, is to get to know the referees as the people as well, because you naturally get to know all the players and all that, but the referees, I think that some are great people as well. I know they're an integral part to the game, and they can make mistakes. Players can make mistakes as well, but I think just acknowledging those people is an important thing.
Yeah, and hence that's why I had a referee show. Mm. So you're hearing it from their perspective. And, you know, how would you like to go out there and you're commentating and you got people, you know, abusing you because you're commentating? That's not fair. You know, you've got to be fair about what are the parts of the game. That's an important part of the game. If you've got no officials, you can't have a game.
Yep.
It won't be held.
Mm.
So you've got to understand those officials. Yes, the game is not cut clean. you know, it is the perspective of the official of what they're going to decide. So if they let something go, okay, it's dangerous that they might get to a point in the game where there's been too much rough stuff, and now how are they going to pull it back? And who are they going to give the first card to when there's been five other incidents that have happened that you haven't picked up?
Mm.
So that's a danger of it. But a really good referee is right on top of things. It's someone like Donald Campbell. He used to be an amazing referee. He had a really funny wit about him, and he would not take no rubbish, but he would let the play flow, and then when it got to a point, he'd say, "Oi, oi, come here. Do you want to go home early? Do you want to go and have your dinner now at 4 o'clock? If not, then, you know, pull your head in and let's have a good game."
Yep.
And so, you know, he would take control of things. So that's a good referee. You've got to give them you've got to be fair to them, because they've got a job to do too.
Definitely, they do. Well, we could talk here all day.
I know.
We can, can't we?
Oh, look, honestly, it's just like never ending.
Well, the most we've ever done is a two-part episode, but I think yours has definitely gone into the three, maybe four. But we need to talk about why you got into football, because you have spent so much time and you did so much for football. But the reason why, you grew up around football. Your dad, the chairman of SA Soccer Federation back in the day. What was it like to grow up around someone like your dad being involved in the game in the area he was?
It was amazing. I go back to the time when he was one of the co-founders of USC Lion. So obviously I wasn't around when they started, but from when I can remember, when I was about 4 years old, 5 years old, the players used to call me Wally's shadow, because I used to be everywhere with him, and I wanted to be a boy, not in the way that people want to be boys now, but because I wanted to play soccer, right? I wanted to play soccer. Yeah. And I used to say, you know, we'd be walking up the pitch and I'd say, "Dad, why can't girls play soccer?" And he goes, "Well, because there's no soccer teams. Boys play soccer, girls don't." Mm. Why? Why not? I want to play. I want to be a boy so I can play soccer, you know. And he said, "Well, you're a girl, so you're not playing soccer, right?" And then obviously by the time the women's league started in the mid-70s, early to mid-70s, I was really – that was already past. I played volleyball then. Yeah. I got into volleyball, so I was into different things. Soccer to me was not – for playing was not part of what I was interested in. But – as a little kid, I used to follow my dad everywhere. So Dad used to be the president of USC Lion. He was also a coach of USC Lion. He was also a manager. He was also, you know, secretary. Mm. So he was like the Mr. Admin. He did, you know, a lot of the committee positions. So I used to always be with him. I'd go to all the games and I'd follow him and I'd sit with him, and they had meetings, and I'd be sitting in the meeting, listening in the corner, drawing, but you're listening to what they're saying, and you grow up with all of this, you know. And you'd be in the change rooms after the match and you hear all the speeches that the coaches would say and the captains would say. It'd be like, wow, this is amazing, you know. So I loved all that stuff because I was a tomboy. I loved that thing, you know. I wasn't a prissy little girl that, you know. I loved all that sort of stuff. So that really interested me. And then as Dad got more involved, he then got involved with the South Australian Soccer Federation, and then he became chairman. So he was chairman for quite a many years. And in actual fact, he was also responsible. He was on the committee responsible for bringing the youth championships to Australia. I think that was in 1981.
Yeah.
And so we had the world – it was like the mini World Cup. All the youth came over to Australia in Sydney and – they played the championships there. So he was involved in integral things. So we had in the 70s, you name it, we had clubs coming out here to play. Legia Warsaw, Polish. We had Dynamo Kiev. We had Middlesbrough. We had Manchester United. We had Liverpool. We had like Scottish teams, Celtic. We had so many different football clubs that would come here to play, and they would play our state team and travel around Australia. And you'd go to those matches and then you'd have the cocktail party afterwards. Now, Hindmarsh was a lot different back then because we had the old stand, and underneath the stand was like a big ballroom, but a big hall type of thing. And that's where they'd have all the, you know, the little cocktail food and stuff like that. And all the teams, the both teams would go there and they'd all enjoy them themselves as well as, you know, committee members and their wives and things like that. So that was very interesting to me, you know, a lot of things that Dad had his hand in and, you know, organising, and it was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. How does he do that? How does he do that? So I was always interested in that.
Mm.
And then, of course, my kids played. So you're there living through all their stuff that they – my daughter, she played for something like 21 years. And she, as I said, she played for in the boys' league. She started in the boys' league. Then when she was 14, switched over to the women's league because the boys, they said we don't have a place for them anymore after that age. And then, as I said, she got a contract in South Melbourne and played over there. So that was exciting for her and came back. So she played for West Adelaide. She was very loyal to West Adelaide and played for them for – she didn't go to other clubs.
Yep.
So, you know, she played with Rachel Quigley. She played with Nicole Tilley, you know. So she fed the ball to Nicole Tilley. So her game is like Craig Goodwin's game. So we quite often compared the two. They're dual footers. They can play left or right. They're free kick specialists. They can score from free kicks. But when they kick the ball, they kick with pinpoint accuracy and it lands either at the feet of the player or the head of the player. And, yeah, they're amazing. They're amazing.
Brilliant.
So that's really – it's always been there. Football's always been there, or soccer's always been there.
Yeah. That's all for part two of my chat with Nat Harrison. Part three is out soon. Sadly, that's the end of the latest episode of Kicking the Local. But still want your weekly football fix? Well, tune in to The Local Game, a new show on Kecko Media YouTube, premiering Thursdays at 6 p.m. with replays on Channel 44 each Friday night. For more local stories, don't miss an episode of Kicking It Local. Subscribe on Spotify now.